Good morning, I'm Paul, founder of the new P&L Brand Purpose Institute and host of the new P&L, Principles and Leadership and Business Podcast. Thank you once again for listening to our latest episode of the new P&L. As mentioned last week, the new P&L was recently selected as the exclusive podcast partner for the Business Change and Transformation Europe Conference, which has been hosted in London here in the UK on the 20th to the 22nd of March. And as part of this partnership, over the next couple of weeks, we will be releasing two more special episodes of the new P&L, with each episode speaking to one of the keynote speakers from the conference and discussing the topic of their keynote. And just before we start, we have again included in the notes that accompany this podcast a special 10% off ticket price for listeners who would like to attend the conference in London. Okay, so we have a brilliant second special episode lined up for you today. We're speaking to Fiona Shaw, Head of Change Practice, Transformation Coach, and DEI Lead at Dentsu International, the global advertising agency group. And we're speaking to Fiona on a conference keynote, Helping Teams to Navigate Change in Times of Ambiguity, which Fiona will be delivering on the afternoon of the 21st of March. And again, all of those details are in the podcast notes. So Fiona, a very warm welcome to the new P&L, special episode for the Business Change and Transformation Conference. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to share my thoughts with you.
No, my pleasure. It'd be great if we could just start with you giving the audience a bit of an introduction to you, what you do and who you do it for.
Yeah, so I'm Fiona Shaw. I've been working within change management for the last 18 years, and I'm currently the change management practice lead for Dentsu International. In my role, I focus mainly on building out our change maturity through kind of refining our change management practices and looking at how we can bring our change community practice together and share our knowledge. Also kind of align with our sort of program management methodologies and governance structures. So I've been doing that. I've been working with Dentsu for the last 6 years. So it's been It's an interesting industry. I think we'll talk about that as we come through the session today. But I'm also a qualified coach. I'm really passionate about assisting people leaders to drive people-led transformation. I think they play a massive role in it and supporting them with that.
Thank you. Now, we're speaking today because you are keynoting at the Business Change and Transformation Europe Conference later this month. And you're presenting a keynote there on helping teams to navigate change in times of ambiguity. And the title of your keynote is, as you suggest, an ambiguity. So I just wanted to, I guess, really push on the last part of that title. And, you know, when we think about times of ambiguity, it suggests that there are periods of complexity or confusion or uncertainty in business. And traditionally, that's been the case. And, you know, business as usual punctuated by periods or times of ambiguity. But we seem to be living in a time now where it is constant change and constant complexity and uncertainty, where it's almost business unusual has become the norm. So to start the conversation, how are the foundations for navigating change different when that change is a constant, not an occasional interruption?
Yeah, as you say, at the moment, we, you know, you hear the terms of validity, uncertainty, complexity, and then ambiguity. And ambiguity is one that I find is one that we especially see within Dentsu and within other organizations. So it's one that's kind of close to most that I do. And so for me, when we talk about how to manage ambiguity, I think it's about bringing three parts of change together. One around that change leadership, a massive part for me, around that, the role of the sponsors and how they drive that. And especially in times of ambiguity, when we're looking for them even more to guide us and direct us. And then for the employees, as we help them to navigate through change, as this is a Dentsu term that we refer to. It's one of our leadership at Dentsu. We ask people to be able to navigate change, so hence why I use that term quite a bit. But it's employees need to know, do, believe. And in that time, again, of the ambiguity, helping them navigate that in the smoothest way possible. And then, you know, we can't forget us change managers and practitioners. who are also dealing with our own, like we write our perfect change plan and then it gets shifted and moved a bit to the right. So how I see it's like, how do all of those three come together? Because that for me is the perfect scenario of a change program, to think about how we can be reactive enough in that times of ambiguity and reflect on the change that people need. And so it's all just kind of making sure that the other thing that ambiguity often leads to is people feeling that higher levels of anxiety. We see huge amounts of lack of trust. As you know, people feel that information has been withheld. And also, you know, that impacts that fight or flight, which we often talk about. So, you know, again, thinking about how we need to be more aligned and more considered of how that ambiguity feels for others. And that's one of the things that, you know, it even as program people, if we feel it feels like, I think, you know, changeable all the time, imagine what it feels like to somebody that didn't even know what the original scope of the program
Yes.
was. So yeah.
And what sort of leadership characteristics or specific leadership characteristics are needed to lead a business in a world of constant change or uncertainty or ambiguity?
Resilience, I think, is resilience, and to be open and honest, not, you know, not, it's not about you. I think, you know, a lot of the times we look to our leaders and again, we'll talk about it, but it's around they need to detach themselves from what's happening and take that moment. So they need to build up their own resilience. They need to build up the resilience of their team. They need to do that through, you know, showing examples of how they can keep up that positivity. So resilience and positivity, open and honest. It's hard to have one. So yeah, let's put resilience as the top one, I think.
How do we balance resilience as leaders with the desire for a more vulnerable leadership? You know, I often have this conversation in the new P&L more generally that I raise questions around vulnerable leadership or vulnerability in leadership, because vulnerability is not just in the hands or the eyes of the giver, it's also in the minds and the hands of the receiver. And vulnerability can be seen as strength to one recipient and weakness to another. So we can demonstrate resilience in a way to the first and demonstrate a lack of resilience to the second. How do we balance that vulnerable leadership or that vulnerability in leadership with resilience in leadership?
Yeah, so within Dentsu, we speak about, and it's not within Dentsu, but you know, around the world, we speak about it's okay not to be okay. And I think that's a really, really important one for leaders to like acknowledge. And several leaders that I've seen over the last few years within Dentsu, because that's kind of where I see it a lot, is that they call that out. It's okay not to be okay. And you know, one of our senior leaders the other day was saying, "Are you okay?" And someone says, "Yeah, but are you really okay?" And to really ask that and then mean it and care. And
Yes.
then I think there's that piece of doing something about it, right? Because it's that it's okay not to be okay, but I don't really mind. I still need you to work 150 hours this week. But I think it's that piece of I'm not okay. And to for me personally, when I hear others to say, "Well, this is just feels really uncertain, doesn't it?" And then you instantly go, "Oh, great. I'm not the only one feeling that uncertainty." So be open, be transparent. I think the resilience piece, though, is important because they have to keep that leadership intent and that movement, forward movement going. So, yes, I always think it's fine, let people have the 5-minute rant, but what are we going to do about that and how
Yeah.
can we take control back over it?
You mentioned in your previous answer about the importance of transparency and communication. And I often think, you know, one of the ways to reduce that ambiguity and to improve that communication is to obviously have that clear, coherent vision that a leader can articulate. One of the frustrations I think a lot of employees experience is the assumption from leaders that when they come to a, let's say, an all hands meeting or a company meeting, whatever it happens to be, and they articulate that coherent vision to reduce the uncertainty and ambiguity, they make the assumption that employees come with an objective frame of mind. Whereas in fact, many employees come to that meeting with the last five CEOs who made a coherent strategy or vision and didn't deliver it, or had lost enthusiasm or momentum 3 months, 6 months, 9 months down the track. So most employees, I think, probably come to those meetings in the negative, in the neutral. What level of self-awareness or what does a leader need to do to to bring themselves into that moment and put them truly into the minds of the employees and understand that there's a skepticism that comes with these conversations to ensure that that coherent vision can be delivered with authenticity and transparency and with force.
Yeah. And a program that I'm working on right now, you know, it's, we're in that situation that they've spoken about this several times before. They've hoped about it. You know, what's different? The question we're getting is what's different this time. And I think it is hard if you come new into that organization. And as you say, you're like the sixth CEO or the COO who's being asked to stand up and present something new. And, you know, we've all seen it or we've tried this before, kind of we've gone from market led to global led to market led to service line led to this way to that way. So I think the part that I would encourage the leader to do is to take, as you say, take that step back, ask them to reflect on, remember when you were, you know, 25, starting out your career, you were hoping that this person was going to have a shiny new toy. The interesting flip on that, though, Paul, is that when I was talking to someone about this earlier and they said, well, not everybody is in that room. So you have to remember that while you have some people who are doubters, you have some people that are shiny eyed, really want to move forward and, you know, kind of aren't in that way. So you've got to get that balance right of kind of not talking about the past, but acknowledging the past. You're always going to have a mix of tenure between people. I'm sure we'll come to talk about that open mindset, which is all that coaching piece of. So one of the things I'd say is, how do you get people to be in the right moment in that moment in time? The past is the past. We can't fix the past. We shouldn't not talk about it, but we shouldn't dwell on it. So yes, it might be that I'm coming up with a similar idea that somebody has already shared, but I'm leading at this time. I'm asking you to come with me. We're not in the same moment in time, especially, I think, you know, over the last couple of years, we have seen an enormous amount of change, not only in working styles, but in the way that I think we've got a whole Gen Z coming through. You know, the landscape is the same. So while I am often one of those skeptics, like, I've tried this 10 times before, because change, people don't find change easy all the time either. That's a big assumption that we shouldn't make. And it's just, I think, about encouraging people to buy into you and the passion that you have for it, and also to what you're asking them to do differently and the mindset that you want them to have to enable this to be a collective success. So again, that, you know, a leader can have that great idea, but it's all about that coalition. It's all about, you know, I'm not, the military do things great and not so great, but the military have a great way of defining the way we are all going to move forward in this one direction. Let's not be frightened of failure. And obviously the military don't necessarily have that, because in their talk and, you know, and other things, they're talking about lives, but in some, a lot of industries, and especially kind of in the media industry, and sort of maybe in these more tech-based industries, failure isn't a failure, it's just a lesson learned. Yes. And so I think it's saying, we're going to try this way. I'm not saying it's the total, you know, Nevada of it's going to be great, but let's at least try it. Let's go for it in this way, and let's all come on board. It's much better if we're moving forward in the same way.
You will be talking about change fatigue in your keynote, and I would imagine there's an awful lot of people out there listening to this and further afield as well that look back over the last 3 or 4 years and do feel exhausted by the constant change and the constant uncertainty. What are some of the initial signs of change fatigue, both from a business perspective, but also more specifically from a leadership and employee perspective?
Yeah, and one of the big things that I want to call out straight away, and I think leaders need to be cautious of, and, you know, from all levels of the organization, that signs of change fatigue can be eagerly confused with what I really dislike the term, but resistance. So, oh, not again, haven't we tried this? And I think in times of fatigue, you're going to see that people are less resilient to change, and therefore that they need to be a bit more supported. So I think making sure for a leader, first of all, that you check, yes, we have, I think almost just acknowledging everyone is change fatigued. I don't think there's anybody in this world that isn't change fatigued right now. So it's just about how to keep up that energy. And I think one of my advice for leaders is to watch out that you're not confusing change fatigue and resistance, or, you know, a lack of buy-in to it. I also think it's watch out for the people who are really in that it's not okay, and they aren't okay, and treat them differently than a person that's got change fatigue. High energy, quick wins, celebrate the successes, keep up the, this is where we're going to go. We're hearing a lot in Dentsu right now about sprints and, sprinting it. Like, great, one of my great inspirational leaders that I spoke to spoke about breaking down that elephant. We can't eat it in one. People can't think anymore about 2027, 28, 29. We have in that, again, in ambiguity, have lost the forward thinking so much because, what's going to happen next? COVID round three or whatever. Like, I think the world is not feeling as secure as it probably did do 5 years ago when, I don't know, thinking back, the 2020 plans were so secure. And, where you can chuckle probably. I'm sure many people listening feel the same way. If they were to open up that 2020 plan, they'd be like, oh, we've still got quite a few things to tick off from this. But for me, back in 20, sort of 17, 18, that 2020 plan was a real firm. I'm not seeing so many 2025, 2026 plans anymore. I think people are trying to just live in the moment. So.
Do you think that's, and I understand completely why that is the case. Do you think that's a worry, though, that in a world that is so, that is changing consistently? So I mean, look at ChatGPT, and what's happened in the last 3 months, even since its announcement at the end of November. Do you think it's a worry that, even though it might be understandable, that we are focusing too much on the now and the sort of short-term immediate future, and perhaps not, for quite understandable reasons, looking further into the future? What's the end result of that?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one, and it's working for a global organization. So I should actually say that Dentsu are planning on 2020, 2030, from a Japan perspective. So we're a, we're a Japan-based like organization, and so Japan are planning because that's the way that they structure. So I think there's got to be a happy medium, because to know where I'm going, I probably want foresight of 5 or 6 years to see that. And I think one of the other, my feelings that I see is that sometimes leaders are so caught in the now that they're not doing the forward thinking. And I think this is where we go back to the leadership layers of the C-suite should be worrying maybe about the 2, 3 year plan, whereas the people who are more in the moment line leaders should be thinking more of in the moment and how am I going to get my team to keep going, to keep the momentum up. What's the 3, 6, 9 month plan look like? Because again, when you're tired, when you're feeling things are too, like we're talking about writing objectives for 2023, who knows what we're going to be doing next 3 months, 6 months down the line. That's not necessarily the way we work anymore, in a few other aspects of our lives. So then has that portrayed into work as well?
I sometimes feel with ambiguity and uncertainty that the biggest challenge with consistent ambiguity and change is not necessarily the change itself, but the way it's framed, i.e. that it's a challenge to overcome rather than an opportunity to embrace. And sometimes that's down to the levels of inclusive communication, given by leadership. So how we do it and how often and what leadership communicates, if you like, with employees. What's your view on that? Is it the ambiguity and the change that's the problem, or the way we frame it sometimes in business?
Yeah, I think it is around probably the framing more. I think when we think about change leadership, it's common as a change or program pitfall. I think as well when we talk about communication, the speed now which information is shared. I don't know any organization that doesn't have a quicker rumor mill than a comps person trying to keep up with. But I think what happened with that speed is it stopped leaders to have that own time, as you refer to, kind of like, put your own oxygen mask on first. So the leaders aren't getting that moment to stop, to think about what they need to reflect and absorb and consider kind of what's the best approach for them and their team. I think the answer is it's a bit of both. Not really giving you the clear direction, but yeah, again, I guess it's a bit of both of those together.
Empathetic leadership is, it's got to be a critical component in change, because everyone has a different capacity to to change, or an aptitude or an appetite for change, if you like. And being the leader that is moving people through that change takes a great deal of nuance and awareness and empathy to understand where people are on that journey. Do you think empathy is considered perhaps less than it should be as a characteristic for leaders in the change process? In your experience, does it sit at the top of recognition, or is it somewhat of an underrated characteristic?
Yeah, I think there's that, you know, I think there used to be a big piece about that emotional intelligence of some of the great leaders don't need training on change leadership because they just know how to do it. And I've seen that, you all have seen that, I'm sure, in all the places you work. You see that person, it's like, I don't need to tell them how to manage their team because they get that it's really important. When it comes to that, though, if somebody doesn't have it, it's quite hard. If somebody, say, is quite data driven or, you know, big picture, and that's their skill strength, and that's why they're great at what they do. So, you know, pockets of people that we work with are often, but I just tell my team and they just do it, and I'm like, yeah, but you don't, and that's not how it works. And one of the things I find is change management will fix all of that, and I'm like, no, we don't fix all of that for you. We can coach people, and I think this is where we can coach people to start to be more empathetic, of, you know, giving them kind of, how would you think somebody else might feel? You know, one of the things I've started to do is getting people to read back the communications and highlight where they think, what's the three or four key points that they want to get across, and then thinking about, have we got that in the right way? Also, one of that, to be empathetic, I think you need to know your team. You need to know your team's strengths and weaknesses. You need to know what a reaction is going to be from your team, positive or negative. We don't have the time because busy is the new thing as well. Everyone's extremely busy. Seen some articles coming out around busyness. But it's that kind of, when you're busy, it's very easy to skip this. But it's actually, skipping this is going to hurt you more in the long run. So coaching a leader, and one of the greatest things I like to see is that leader start to click that, actually, if I spend the time doing this, and I know that from the 10 key people that I need to get to be on my coalition, is around, well, the one likes it face to face, one likes it verbally, one likes so much amount of detail, it's just ridiculous. But the great leaders know that stuff. The great leaders will be able to go around and just say, well, I just grabbed Bob for 5 minutes because Bob likes it to be explained that way. Sally's all right, she'll just do whatever I need to do, etc. And I think, you know, building that into your leadership skill set is really key. And for those that don't have it, as a change manager, this is where coaching is the massive part of, because you're going to have to find the carrot for them, or the nudge for them to start to think that way.
Talk me a little bit more through that, sort of the coaching role in changing mindset. What's the, you know, if a leader of a business is listening today, they know that change is coming, or that they need to make considerable or consistent change in their business to adapt to market conditions. What role does coaching play, and what is the process for that to develop a more positive change mindset?
Yeah, so coaching is something that I experienced for the first time on my return from my maternity leave. And I had it and I thought, wow, this is really, really useful. Then, you know, carried on, had another child, came back to work. And then I, you know, during the heat of COVID, I returned and I just picked up my laptop, and that was my return from work. And then I thought, well, there's more to life than this, and sort of reached out to think about, actually, I really enjoyed that coaching. And coaching is one of those things that, until you've had it, and you had it in a successful way, because there's a few things with coaching. You need to find the right coach for you. You need to have the right thought of being open to somebody giving you some steer and some guidance. I find it quite interesting when people are having maybe performance issues and they get given a coach, and I'm like, well, how can you know how that relationship must be quite tough to somebody to be not open to that, or not realizing what they're trying to be coached upon. So coaching is not consulting. Coaching is not training. Coaching is not counseling. Coaching is moving forward and enabling that person to understand what they can get and how they can shift their mindsets and behaviors to move forward. In what we probably see a lot in the real world of coaching, it's probably what we refer to in the true coaching way of blended coaching. It's a mix of training or and consulting with coaching together. True coaching is the, let's say, for example, we're together for an hour, 25% is me, 75% is them talking. It's a very, very trusted relationship. And once you start, you can't stop. It's quite addictive in a way of, oh, I'd like to think about that and how could you address it this way? But the key part is this mindset. So we talk about the closed and the open mindset. So if you have a like a positive mindset, failure is not a loss, it can be an opportunity. You can start to see the gain and not the pain. But these are all things we know that in times of ambiguity are really easy to lose sight of. So if you are a leader listening and you're thinking about, well, okay, should I try coaching? Certainly, I highly recommend it. There are lots of coaches out there, so it's about finding the right coach for you. Coaching is not somebody, coach can't be someone you know, can't be a friend, can't be somebody. It's why it's sometimes difficult to, or in the workplace, because you can't ask somebody, and it's not mentoring. It's very different to that. So, yeah, I'm a big advocate for people. It's a self-investment tool as well, and really can just open your eyes to, as we refer to in coaching, lots of aha moments of, oh yes, if only I flip it that way or I saw it that way. You don't need coaching for helping you writing an action plan. That's not what coaching is for. Coaching is about, I just can't see a way out of this in my current situation. So yeah.
How do you set the expectations at the start of that coaching process to ensure that the individual being coached knows that the solution lies within them and the coach is there to help facilitate the realization rather than to tell them or to deliver it on their behalf?
Yeah, so I guess that's it. It's an interesting one because it depends on what level of mindset or confidence, or you know, if somebody comes to you and they're quite broken, I think to say that that's it within you is probably a slower thing. If somebody is like just needs a few tweaks, it's like you've got this. It's just we're just gonna I'm gonna ask you just a few questions to see can we maybe not open your eyes, because that's very directive, because coaching is not directive, but it's very much around how can we look at solutions that maybe you haven't explored yet within yourself, is probably the better way of putting it. So it is that difficult part of, you know, coaching takes more than one session. So you know, you're thinking, oh, I'll have one life coaching session and my life's going to be sorted. No, that it's a probably about a 6 to 8 session process. You'll need to have a few discoveries. You'll need to find whether you've got the right fit with that coach or not. Then you're going to start to unpick. And once you unpick, you're going to need, that's why you're going to need more than one session. I've had lots of hours of coaching, and it's now that I have my coach that I can pick up, have an hour with my coach or 40 minutes with my coach, because we know each other so quickly we can drill through something. But I think my thing is patience is a little bit of keep going with it. If you don't feel like you had the first one and you walked out with all the, you're not going to now, you know, fix all your problems, try again or try a different coach. So
And in terms of the keynote itself for the Business Change and Transformation Conference, those who are listening, who are thinking about attending in London, you're on the 21st of March in the afternoon. What are the top line sort of key takeaways, I guess, for those who are listening, who are considering coming to the conference, that they can take away, they can walk out and practically deliver in their business. Just a top line overview of what they look like from the keynote.
yeah, so I'm going to talk about how you can use the change curve, the circle of control. I've got a very easy coaching model that you can replicate. As much as possible, I'm going to share with you all my actual real life experiences. It's not all theoretical. It's hopefully going to be fun, interactive, and you might learn some things about yourselves.
Sure, we will. Fiona, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Great chatting.
Thank you. If you've enjoyed this special episode today in partnership with the Business Change and Transformation Europe Conference, I invite you to check out the links in the notes that accompany the podcast. As I mentioned earlier, there is a link in the notes with a 10% off code and also a link to Fiona's Helping Teams to Navigate Change in Times of Ambiguity keynote synopsis. If you do attend the conference, I'll be there on the 21st and the 22nd and delivering the opening keynote on the 22nd on transactional to transformational leadership. So feel free to say hello if you see me while you're there. I'd love to chat. Thanks again for listening to the New P&L special episode today. If you have enjoyed this or any of the other episodes of the New P&L, I invite you to rate us or review us. It all helps with our ratings and our rankings. So I'm Paul, host of the New P&L. Thank you once again for listening and have a great day.